Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to do part two. Can you remember what we talked about last week? We talked about how your life is a story, isn't it? Or it's like a story, but it is a story. And we talked about some of the strategies that, as a school teacher, we taught reading strategies. In other words, things that would help you understand or get comprehension out of a story. So I'm using some of those and putting a bit of a slant on it and saying, well, your life is like a story. You can apply these strategies to your life. So we talked about some of them last week, and we're going to carry on this week. Viktor Frankl. Who can remember who Viktor Frankl is? I mentioned him last week. Does anyone remember it from last week? Viktor Frankl, no one remembers. Must have been that moment when you drifted off into sleep somewhere. He was in a concentration camp for 3 years. This is a Nazi concentration camp. He was a psychologist before he went in. And while he was in there, he discovered a way of surviving in there. And it was that between stimulus and response is a space, and what you do in that space determines who you become. And then he brought that out, and he built his psychology practice on that. Amazing. A lot of what we have today in psychology is based on that, meaning that you can choose your attitude. You can't choose what happens to you in life, but you can choose how you respond to it. So where you are right now might not be, things that are happening around you may not be what you've chosen, but you can choose how you respond to that, and how you do will determine who you become and who I become. So it's a really encouraging thing, meaning that you're not a victim. You're not a victim. You can make good choices that will then lead you. The circumstances may not change immediately, but you'll grow as a person with God. You'll grow as a person. So Viktor Frankl said, even more people today have the means to live, but no meaning to live for. Did you catch that? Even more people today have the means to live, but no meaning to live for, particularly in the Western world, don't they? So the strategies I'm going to give you today, the strategies that I want to give you today are like strategies that will help you to, you know, with the story of your life, to really make meaning and comprehend your life. So I want to go back a few years. Can we go for a walk down memory lane? Yeah? And you'll remember that your personal story, if you think about your life as a story, as we were saying, you've got characters in your story, you have a plot, you've got a setting, you know, a time and a place where it all started. And your story was very closely linked to your mum and dad's story, wasn't it? Way back. And it was authored, your story, by those early relationships. So for some of you, that could have been happy, a really happy time. Some of you, it may have been really traumatic or somewhere in between. There are many factors in those early stages that were written into your story. Many of the factors that influenced your early story were a result of your parents' decisions. For example, where you lived, even the time in which you were born into this world was partly a result of the decision of your parents. You know, as a child, the school that I went to gave me a certain selection of children that I could befriend. I mean, they put me in a school, and then I had a certain social network that was available to me, and so that influenced, and then the interactions I had with them started influencing my story. And then the church we went to, sports teams. So I'm sure my story was a bit similar to your story as well. I hope you're thinking about your early story as well and thinking about how maybe it was linked a bit to the decisions of your parents or caregivers. And then as a teenager, my teenagers, I bore them in church now. So, but my teenagers, when I became a teenager, I suddenly realized my story has been influenced by my parents' story. I want to do some writing myself. I want to start writing my own story. I realized there were many happy chapters in my story. Can you relate to me? I realized there were many happy chapters, but I wanted to begin defining who I was in the story that was unfolding in my life. I didn't want to be completely defined by who my mum and dad said I was. So I began to dream my own story. I wanted to begin to define who I was. Can anyone relate to that through the teenage years? Did any of you do that, or am I the only rebellious teenager? So maybe, I'm just going to put it out there, maybe you were born into a horror story. I hope not. But for some of you, it might have been a horror story, and suddenly you realize, I don't want to be in this horror story anymore. I want to be in an action adventure, or I want to be in a romantic story, or I want to be, you know, we had this show in New Zealand called Country Calendar, and Kieran's mum and dad and my mum and dad, we're both from a background that, you know, is on the land. Kieran's mum and dad were farmers, mine orchardists. They both our sets of parents used to love watching Country Calendar. And so I don't know if you have an equivalent over here. It's like stories about people who are on the land, and the camera crew go on there and ask them questions, and they go around the, you know, maybe you don't. Country File, yeah. Maybe you grew up on Country File. Mike Pritchard was a bit like that, wasn't he? He thought, no, I want to, and he started a different story. But it's like that, isn't it? You can begin to chart your own way. You know, some of you have begun to define your story by a failure. And it's sort of just started, you feel like that's sort of defined your story. Any of you remember the movies, they had the big reels, the massive reels, and each, you know, it's like tape, and it's like each frame is like thousands and thousands of those tapes, and they spin it, and it becomes a motion picture. You know, some of you, your failure is like a few frames on that, and you've defined your whole life by that just that small moment in time. I heard one person say it like this. He said, treat failure not as a monument, but as a moment. Failure is a moment. It's not a monument. Don't make a monument out of it. Jesus forgives. Forgive yourself. Move on. You've got the rest of your life. It's the difference between having a moment, but God doesn't want us to go from failure to failure, does he? So in our story, he gives us wisdom to help, doesn't he? Now, the first strategy I want to talk to you about is context. Now, I suppose you've all heard that word context. It's you can't just kind of take, like I said, one small incident in your life and then define your whole story by it. You need a wider context. So your story is part of a bigger story. Context brings perspective. Context brings perspective, and then perspective influences attitude. And then attitude determines altitude. You know, the altitude of your life is influenced by your attitude. But your attitude is influenced by your perspective, and your perspective is influenced by your context. So each has a knock-on effect. Now, you're probably thinking that was a bit theoretical, a bit kind of abstract. Could you give me something to tie that down to? So I'll give you a little story that will explain this. You know, there was a guy in the Bible, and you'll know who I'm talking about. Paul, the apostle, he was involved in a pretty dramatic story, hating Christians. He said he would be casting his lot to see Christians murdered. He was getting them put in prison. He was, the way he viewed, or his context, was that he viewed God through the eyes of a Pharisee. He had misunderstood who God was. And because of his misunderstanding, was living a certain way. It was coming out in his behavior. And his story was starting to unfold. And it was he thought he was doing the right thing. He thought, man, I'm doing the great thing for God here, killing all these Christians and persecuting them, putting them into prison. I'm doing a fantastic thing here. So that was his context. That gave his perspective, which influenced his attitude, which then impacted his life. You see how it works? Now, I'm just going to read to you a little bit, and it's when Paul is sharing his testimony with Agrippa. Are you with me? So here's Paul talking to Agrippa, and it explains how a shift in his context changed his perspective, which changed his attitude, which then influenced his whole life. It says, on one of these journeys, I was going to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priest. About noon, King Agrippa, as I was on the road, I saw a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, blazing around me and my companions. We all fell to the ground, and I heard a voice saying to me in Aramaic, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. Wow, a bright light. God met him. Jesus met him. It's hard for you to kick against the goads. Then I asked, who are you, Lord? I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. He didn't realize that as he was persecuting God's people, he was persecuting Jesus himself. I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. The Lord replied, now get up, stand up on your feet. I've appeared to you to appoint you as a servant and as a witness of what you have seen and will see of me. I will rescue you from your own people and from the Gentiles. I'm sending you to them to open their eyes and turn them from darkness to light, from the power of Satan to God, so that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. So then, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the vision from heaven. See, his context changed. He went from a Pharisee to now someone who had the light shone on. He saw Jesus, saw what he was like. Romans 12 verse 1 says, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view. Now, a view is a perspective, isn't it? His view changed. He went from being one who was a righteous judge, casting, you know, I'm the judge here, dishing out. He thought the Christians had blasphemed or whatever, and he was putting them into prison and getting them killed. Now, he saw he was the one that needed mercy. So he had a huge shift in his perspective. So he said, therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. So God had incredible mercy on Paul, didn't he? See how his story changed. The story went from being this to completely different. Amazing. Amazing. You know, Paul realized he needed mercy. He said, in view of God's mercy, he was saying, please offer your body as a living sacrifice in view of what God's done. I wouldn't expect anyone to offer their body as a living sacrifice for God unless they had a view of his mercy. Why would anyone do that without knowing that God has had mercy on them? And so that's the revelation, really, that changed Paul. He realized what a sinner he had been, and how merciful God had been, and that changed the story. And that's why Jesus said, I didn't come to call the righteous, but to call sinners. And that's where our story changes, doesn't it? Our story changes when we realize we only live because of God's mercy, really, don't we? And then we become people who give mercy instead of judgment. Anyhow, that's just to explain that little bit there, context. That's our story, isn't it? You know, that's our worldview, if you like, as Christians. Our worldview is that, you know, there's basically four questions that define a worldview. The first question is, where did I come from? Every person has a worldview, whether they acknowledge it or not. A worldview will explain, where did I come from? The second thing is, now that I'm here, what's my purpose? Why am I here? The third question is, now that I know my purpose, how am I meant to live out this purpose? And the fourth thing is, now that I've known my purpose, I'm living it out, what happens to me once I leave this earth? What happens? So every worldview will explain those four things. Now, as Christians, we have a Christian worldview. Now, within Christendom, there's different views and different things that various Christian groups might think regards that, but generally, we know as Christians what our worldview is. Maybe that's a message for another time. But that is our context. As Christians, that's our Christian worldview context. Whereas there's a worldview that is completely different that's taught to our kids in high school. And that influences the way the young people live because they're living under that context. Does that make sense? But my next strategy I want to talk to you about is the main, and this is something you'd talk to the kids about, eh, Karen? You'd say, what are the main ideas in the story? What are the main themes? Why is that important? The reason why that's important is you can read a story and you can just trivialize it in the sense that you're getting the trivia but not the main thing. You need to find what's the main theme here, what's the main thing. The biblical word that I would use for the main thing would be discretion, in the sense that discretion is the ability to choose what should be done in a particular situation. So when you're living out your story, so we'll go back to your story. Are you sort of applying this and thinking about your own story that's unfolding? So if you think about your story, what are some of the main things that you want to build into your story? What are some things that you want in your story? What are the main themes, the main ideas? You know, I think about, and I'm not trying to knock the celebrities because I feel sorry for them in a lot of ways, but they've, in a way, they've gone after, the main thing might be, say, to wear the gold jewellery or the diamond earrings, to mix with those certain people, to have the car, to have the mansion. That might be what the main thing for them that they're chasing, maybe. But we see so many of the celebrities realizing that the thing that they thought was the main thing is not the main thing. And so what is the main thing? We want a life that doesn't collapse, implode in on itself. We want a life that endures. That's what I want. And so I'm just going to give you a few main things. Is that all right? So I assume that you all want a quality story. Yeah, I want a quality story. That's what I want. So let's look in the Bible. I'm not going to go into them all, but this is homework for you. But let's have a look at the first one. These three things remain: faith, hope, and love. The greatest of these is love. Love is the main thing. God so loved the world that he gave his son for you. He loves you. We learn to love others. Love, faith, hope, and love. Solomon, above all else, guard your heart. Above all else, guard your heart. That must be pretty important if he said, above all else, guard your heart. It must be pretty important. What does that mean? How is your heart this morning? Have you forgiven the people that have offended you, have hurt you? Are you holding resentments, bitterness? You know, above all else, guard your heart. Solomon said, the principal thing is this, meaning this is pretty much the top thing. Get wisdom. See, these are the main themes, these are the main ideas. If you don't have wisdom, you're not going to go far. Your story's going to just go, pfft. You know, I've done enough foolishness to know that it doesn't work. I've been down enough foolish roads to know that there's nothing there. I'd rather have wisdom than foolishness. So that's another main thing. Jesus said, there is a great commission. A great commission. He gave the church one great purpose. Go. Go. Now, there's a difference between sharing your faith and sharing your faith. There's one way that you can do it that will just make people run at a million miles an hour away from you. We saw one guy at Clandidno, and he was standing there behind a railing, and he was just like standing there. And we were walking past, and he was basically shouting out, Isaiah 43 says, and who the heck knows what Isaiah 43 is? Gary Gibbs talks about sharing the good news with a bad news face. Have you seen those, sharing the good news with a bad news face?
Yeah, God really loves you. Turn or burn.
That's not sharing the good news. Go into all the world. You know, if we did it like Jesus did it, our church wouldn't be like this. We'd have a church full of people. We'd have thousands of people. If someone could come to church knowing that if they were sick, they would get healed. If someone knew that if they came in with a problem, a mental illness, they came in with an emotional problem, that, you know, we would do what Jesus did, bind the brokenhearted, set the captives free, give sight to the blind, people with no vision, get a purpose in life. I'm sure the good news, you know, so that's another one. Sorry, I got off on a bit of a tangent there. So there we go. We can. So there's some main things there. Did you get those down? Faith, hope, and love. Greatest of these is love. Above all else, guard your heart. Get wisdom and the Great Commission. Now, there are stories in the Bible that are tragedies, aren't there? Now, the thing that we can do is when we're writing our story, we can learn from the tragedies. We don't have to be the tragedy. It's a great thing. You're not condemned to one of the tragic stories in the Bible. No one here is condemned to any tragic story in the Bible. We can learn from, that's why they're there. They're there so we don't become them. If you want to be like that, that's your choice, but no one is condemned to be that. So if you don't want to be like Solomon, who had all the greatest wisdom in the whole world but blew it because he slept with 1,000 women, then that's your choice. But the Bible tells us that for that reason. If you don't want to be like Cain, who was jealous of his brother and killed him and buried him in the ground, and then God sent him as a restless wanderer over the earth, fine. It's there for a reason. Learn from it. Let's not be that person. That's why the stories are there, so that you can write your story. Be like, if you want to be like beloved John, who rested his head on Jesus' breast and could hear the heartbeat of Jesus, why don't you find out what he did to be like that and copy him? Sorry. You hear what I'm saying? So strategy three is identifying, and what that means is clarifying. So you're identifying something, you're clarifying it. To identify it, you've got to clarify it. So have you ever read a story and because of the way it was written, everything seems foggy? Anybody had that experience? It's been written poorly, so everything's a bit foggy. It's like being stuck in the fog. I used to, I had a game of paintball. Anyone play paintball? It's a great game, awesome game. I was given a pair of goggles that fogged up. And I played the whole game with foggy glasses. And it was the most terrifying experience. Because I didn't want to take them off because I didn't want to get a paintball in my eye. So I kept them on, but it was just horrific. I was, ooh, I must have looked ridiculous running around with them. You know, vision, clarity is vision, isn't it? The Bible says, without a vision, the people will perish. What does that mean? It means unless we have a clear picture of a preferable future, we'll just lose a zest or a passion for life because we don't know where we're going. Every day is like, oh, don't know what's happening today. We all need a purpose, a vision. That's what that means, clarity. We need clarity about where we're going. Stephen Covey wrote a book called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Anybody read that book? He's not necessarily a born-again Christian, but some people, I wouldn't read that. It's not a Christian book. There's no way you catch me reading that one. Stephen Covey's a secular person. But I tell you what, Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, there's one that he says there. He says, start with the end in mind. It's vision. Start with the end in mind. I wonder where Stephen Covey got that idea from. God said to Abraham, I have made you a father of many nations. Start with the end in mind. God gave Abraham the end before he even got there. So Abraham knew what he was heading for. That gave him vision. God said to Abraham, look out to the north, the south, the east, and the west. All the land that you see, I'm going to give to you and to your descendants. That's vision. Some of these secular books are more insightful than a lot of the Christian books we've got out there today. I don't want to get onto that. So I had a friend, his name's Toby Collins, a really awesome guy, a really good friend of mine in New Zealand. And he said this, he was speaking to, this is when we were leading young people, he said, what do you want people to say at your funeral? In other words, what kind of person are you becoming, or what kind of person do you want? Now, some of us are not used to thinking about death. There was a guy called St. Jerome who wrote the Vulgate, the Latin version of the Bible. He used to work on his desk, was a skull, a human skull. Every time he looked at it, it would remind him to keep working. He needed to finish translating the Bible, so he kept looking. It would remind him of the urgency of his task. What do you want your epitaph to say? Gus was known as a kind person. He was generous, forgiving, enjoyable to be around. Gus wasn't perfect, but was a good man with a good heart. He loved God, his family, wider church family, community. Those who were closest to him could say he wasn't one person in public and one at home. His wife vouched for his character. Sure, he had faults and struggles, but he fought to keep Jesus at the heart of his life. Am I there yet? No. But I don't want people at my funeral to say, oh, flip, I'm glad he's gone. What a pain in the neck. Well, what a tragedy, wouldn't it? We've got to think these things, don't we? In fact, it's been a rude awakening for me to take funerals for people in Holyhead whose family hated them. Do you know, I'll tell you a story. There was one funeral that I took recently, and I don't want to say too much about it, so I won't reveal too much about it, but the children of the person that I was taking the funeral for wanted to play the Johnny Cash song, Ring of Fire, because that's where they wanted their father to be, because that's how he treated them. Now, that's pretty heavy, isn't it? And we had a laugh about it, and we said, no, of course we can't play that. Imagine playing Ring of Fire. But what do you want people to say about you? More importantly, what do you want God to say about you? Is he going to look at you and say, well done? Is he going to look at me and say, well done, good and faithful servant? We're all going to have that conversation one day, and God's got you. He loves you. So vision, what are you becoming? Now, shape. I better just do this one and then I'll close because I'm going over time, but I know you're enjoying this message so much you want me to carry on, so I'll just carry on a bit. Shape. So everybody's got a shape. You've got a shape. Say to the person next to you, you've got a shape. Ask them, what shape are you? A rectangle? A square? A triangle? A circle? Everybody's got a shape. Now, shape. S-H-A-P-E. Shape. Spiritual gifts. You've all got gifts, spiritual and natural. You've all got a heart. You've got passion. You've all got a personality, haven't you? You've all got a temperament. Phleg, choleric, sanguine, melancholy, mixture of all of them. We're all a distinct combination of each one. Introverts, extroverts, we're all special and unique. We've all got experience, each one of you. So we all have a shape, an individual shape. Now, that's for you. When I used to surf at Raglan, and James, have you been to Raglan? He has. It's one of the best surf breaks in New Zealand. Spent a lot of time there. Driving to Raglan, the predominant wind, which was a westerly onshore, you drive by and you see the shrubs and the small trees on the side of the road literally shaped by the wind, stuck in this kind of lopsided, they're just like that. You see something like that in Holyhead as well. Ethan pointed one out the other day. You're not like that. Life hasn't just, you're not a tree in that sense. Maybe metaphorically in some ways you are, but you're not a tree. You haven't just been stuck into the shape, have you? You're not like that tree that's just been warped by the wind and you got nothing, you can't do anything about it. But that shape that I described for you before, that's your responsibility. It's your responsibility to develop your personal, spiritual, natural gifts. It's your responsibility to develop a heart for God, for life, to have a passion for life. It's your responsibility to find out what kind of personality you are, to be a... God didn't... When you got saved, he didn't make you into a boring person. You did that. So you've all got those... You've all got a shape. And there's something there for all of you to do. Whether it's to heal a hurt, answer a mystery, solve a mystery, meet a need, solve a problem. There's something in society, something in the world at large that you can serve Jesus by serving the needs of mankind. Everybody, God's got something for everybody. There's something for you to do. And I'm going to finish with a scripture, John 15, verse 15. Jesus said, I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends. For everything that I learned from my Father, I've made known to you. You know, if you find that thing to serve mankind with, for Jesus, Jesus said serving leads to friendship. Because in the serving, you relating to him, you're asking him, he's given you wisdom, and in the serving, he begins to show you the Father's business, and then you become not a servant, but a friend. And of course, you're a son and a daughter as well, but you hear what I'm saying. So let's just pray. Thank you for your patience. Yeah, just as we're playing this final song, I wonder if we could, there's probably something about what we've shared this morning, what I've shared this morning, something about it that can positively impact the story of your life that's unfolding. So as we sing this final song, could we just bring our story to God? Maybe it was the main points, the main things. Maybe you've got so caught up in the trivia, you've forgotten the main things. Or maybe that you didn't realize you had control over the shape. You have control over the shape. You can develop your gifts. You can get a passion for, you know, God. It's not, you're not suffering some kind of fate where you're powerless over your life. So as we just sing it, let's open our hearts to God and let's just really invite him to come and make those changes that need to happen in all of our hearts. So we'll just sing this final song together. And if you want to respond, you can, and I'd love to pray for you.